Was it the Cape Drive time? Welcome back. 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp line. There you can query credit. And yes, you can criticize as well. A high-level delegation of Sudan officials, led by the head of the ruling council, was in the United Arab Emirates for talks with Emirati and U.S. officials. Haha, what's going on there? In August, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo raised the issue of Sudan establishing ties with Israel. This development indicates the emergency of a new approach in terms of Israel's policies on the African continent. I think the question, what on earth is going on here? So, is Israel using the UAE as a lever to gain support in Africa? Online researcher at the Afro Middle East Center, Ibrahim Dean. Ibrahim, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam and thanks for having me.
What is cooking here? I never thought that the UAE would have leverage with Sudan to tip Sudan over into the bin of Israeli political relationships.
I mean, I think there's two things we need to look at when we think about the UAE. One is the axis, the whole UAE-Saudi-Egyptian axis. And so, you know, it gives the UAE, and the UAE is generally at the head of the axis, mainly because Egypt has its own issues, and Mohammed bin Salman sees Mohammed bin Zayed as a mentor. And so the UAE does have, you know, a lot of influence in the region, specifically on as a result of that. What's happening now in terms of the Sudan-U.S. meeting is, you know, the transitional or the sovereign council, not necessarily the government of Sudan, which is basically the council that controls the government and appoints the government. You know, they have, as per their relations with the UAE, their opposition to you know, a former al-Bashir elements, have wanted to move off the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism list. And so, you know, many Middle Eastern countries are actually seeing, you know, normalization with Israel as a means of getting off this list. So they're seeing Israel as a way of improving relations with the U.S. And so, you know, Abdul Fattah Burhan visited or spoke with Netanyahu, you know, in February this year. Sudan has allowed Israeli aircraft, you know, the ability to use its airspace. And so, you know, basically what the Sudanese leadership at the moment wants is they want to be removed of the state sponsor of terrorism, and they want a generous aid package because currently, you know, Sudan is struggling with floods, inflation is at a high. And so, they, you know, this is the carrot they dangling to actually try and get removed off the state sponsor of terrorism list. Now, you know, the political formation, the activist and social formation in the country are not in support of this. But unfortunately, because, you know, it's currently a transitional period, they don't have much say. There is yet no parliament, for example, or legislative body that's been announced. So, you know, the council is doing what it wants to do at the moment and unconstrained by popular will.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a political contradiction, isn't it? Because the minute you get a people's parliament in Sudan, this will be overturned. But my concern here is, without going into conspiracy theories, is that can we ask ourselves the question, if this Council of Sudan goes into an agreement with Israel, that council's interests are going to be protected at all costs. So are we going to see a further deterioration of the situation in Sudan because of the meddling of a country that wants to keep the support of a discredited council that at the end of the day will not be representing the interests of the people?
Yes, I mean, and that's been the case everywhere. You know, we, for example, just look in neighboring Chad, where the Deby regime is only in charge because of its relations with the French and its relations now increasing with Israel. But, you know, in saying so, there's some differences in the Sudanese case compared to many other cases. One is, okay, you know, the council is not constraining, is not democratically elected, and that's something. And, you know, even earlier when Abdul Fattah Burhan, the head of the council, met Netanyahu, you know, there was big criticism And, you know, some of the Sudanese, or the Sudanese government, which is different to the council in a sense, is arguing that it doesn't have the mandate or the prerogative to be able to declare on, you know, relations with Israel or not, and that this can only happen in the election. But, you know, in saying so, on a popular level in Sudan, there is differences in relation, in terms of relations with Israel. Specifically, there's unlike many other countries in the region, many of the rebel movements aren't opposed to closer relations with Israel. Specifically, you know, those in the Blue Nile and Kordofan regions who, you know, as part of Israel's periphery doctrine theory or periphery doctrine perspective, actually received some support from Israel in their fight against the central government. But, you know, within Khartoum, the mandate of the popular will is against relations with Israel until the Palestinian cause is realized. But, you know, as you say, in saying so, unfortunately, the problem is, as in many other Arab countries and many other Middle Eastern countries, is that the leaderships are undemocratically elected. And, you know, their legitimacy is reliant upon support from international powers. And so they are able to do, you know, and undertake measures or implement measures that are not necessarily both in their own interest and in the remit of the population.
I think the big question we have to ask: what on earth is Israel doing in Africa in the first place? I mean, what do they stand to gain? I was told by a diplomat that it's a one-way deal. It's a one-way street. You get into bed with Israel. They bring in their water scientists, their agriculturists, etc., etc. But say one little word against Israel, and they will unilaterally pull out. So it's almost it's one-way traffic.
Yes, I mean, unfortunately, many of the African countries, you know, the big issue is water and arms. And that's the biggest cog in understanding why Israel has so much or is gaining so much influence in on the continent. Many countries, for example, Chad, just looking at Chad, you know, the dictatorial regimes or autocratic regimes, reliant or feel that Israeli arms and also American arms, because now, you know, they do feel that relations with Israel would improve relations with America. These arms would enable these regimes to be able to crack down on dissent. And so, you know, the main, in a sense, appeal of Israel is the security-first approach by these governments. And Israel, you know, all it wants in response is it's benefiting from the security cooperation because it is arms, it is scientists, but also it, you know, wants observer status on the African Union, and it basically wants these countries to actually form a bloc to try and prevent any anti-Israel sentiment or any inter-Israel relation declarations in international fora such as the UN Human Rights Council, the UN Security Council, and the UN General Assembly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bloody nerve. That's the only way I can put it. Israel observer status at the African Union, ha ha, that means Israeli interference in African Union, doesn't it?
Yes, and it basically means a country that is still, in a sense, a colonial entity or a settler colonial entity actually has, you know, status in a continent which just 60 years ago, you know, rid itself for the most part of colonialism. But, you know, unfortunately, the problem in on the continent is the fact that many countries aren't democratic or, you know, or fully representative of the popular will. And, you know, these presidents and these regimes feel that Israel, you know, or rely on Israel's security know-how to actually crack down on dissent. And so, you know, easily allowing and inviting Israel in the continent. You know, there was supposed to be an Israel-Africa summit the year before last year, which, you know, really threatened to upend the status quo and, you know, was luckily stopped at the last moment.
It's ironic. I mean, these African countries looking to Israel for security issues and all of that. Israel, for 70 years, hasn't been able to put down a people who haven't even got an army for 70 years, haven't been able to put them down, and yet people in Africa see them as some kind of military stroke security savior. I think the opposite is true.
I mean, that is an irony, you know, that with all the know-how Israel has, it really hasn't been able to stop, you know, the Palestinian efforts at realizing their rights, at least on a popular individual level. But you know, I mean, unfortunately, the continent is looking towards security, is looking towards more arms, and you know, is getting these arms from, you know, there's similar to, in a sense, China and Russia, and in some instances the U.S., countries like Israel don't really look at human rights record. They don't really look at political system. They just look at what, you know, quid pro quo they're gaining economically. They're also gaining politically, and you know, in this way, Israel has made big inroads onto the continent in recent years.
Yeah, they certainly have. But something that fascinates me, you spoke about the UAE-Egypt-Saudi axis. Now, the UAE has jumped into bed. Bahrain has jumped into bed. Egypt's been in bed for years, especially since Sisi. Saudi Arabia, they're looking a bit coy, aren't they? Why is Saudi Arabia hanging back? I thought that bin Salman would have been front of the queue to go and shake hands and lick boots in Tel Aviv.
Yes, and bin Salman was supposed to visit Washington a few weeks ago, you know, wanted to sign on to the normalization. The only hindrance for bin Salman is his father. His father has opposed him on the Palestinian issue, and that's why he can't do it so openly at the moment. And they're trying to convince, you know, the Bahraini king, for example, wrote a letter in recent weeks to the Saudi leadership about, you know, ties with Israel, for example. And so, you know, there is contestation within the Saudi leadership, specifically between Salman and Mohammed bin Salman, which, you know, isn't normally the case. But specifically on the Palestinian issue, Salman and many reports say has taken and adopted measures and written out or issued statements that haven't even been vetted by his son, who normally does this. And so, you know, the Saudi position will likely change as soon as Salman is, you know, pushed out of the way or forced to abdicate, or, you know, he's quite old, passes on. Because Mohammed bin Salman, you know, has no qualms about relations and normalization with Israel. I mean, you know, you just have to look at the public level. The lecture a few weeks ago by Sheikh Sudais, you know, which was paving the way for, you know, at least the clerical establishment and the public to try and normalize, you know, pave the way for or them to accept the normalization with Israel.
Yeah, we live in strange times. I think that's all I can say. Ibrahim Dean, Research AMEC, Afro Middle East Center, thanks for chatting to us. Stay safe. Enjoy Heritage Day tomorrow.
Thanks for having me, and you guys as well.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.